And with that, we have now a panel with Cecilia Björner, Director General for International Development Cooperation. We have Karin Fellman, Senior Policy Specialist at CEDA. And Lisbeth Peterson, Head of International Programs, Forum Syd. And, of course, Richard Youngs. And I will let you, of course, Richard, respond also to the comments that's been made previously. But I would like to let you all first start with commenting on the recommendations that Richard's been made in terms of how donors should possibly rethink civil society. And then, of course, I'll also let you comment specifically on the demand of flexibility that's been raised a lot today. So, Cecilia, would you like to start?
Good morning. First of all, I would like to excuse myself for sit down, but there were only three tables, and that is lucky for me because I have problems with my hips, so I prefer to sit down. It's no offense to you, it's just that it's more comfortable for me. First of all, I would like to thank so much for a very, very interesting report. I thank EBA for having performed it. And I also thank the author and the writer for it. It is very interesting. I think it's a very solid report, and it's easy to read and possible to read also for a busy bureaucrat. I know that my minister and state secretary will read it with interest as well. I would like to start with a very perhaps a given for all of you that are seated here. But one fundamental political component when it comes to how we will work with civil society is that we have a new government. It's not so new anymore, but the present government has a very strong and firm belief in civil society, to work through civil society and with civil society. It's a fundamental building block in their political idea about how to do development cooperation in Swedish development cooperation. We are lucky to already have good structures, or as a bureaucrat, I would use a bureaucratic word, instruments, for this purpose. We have one instrument I would like to call the letter of intent between the government and the Swedish NGOs, which is a basic paper to support broad-based support for the Swedish civil society to be a very important implementer of Swedish development cooperation. We have then, since it's in this report, and we're actually discussing two things. We're discussing democracy and human rights support, and we are discussing support to civil society, and the government has a strategy for both. The strategy for democracy and human rights development, human rights aid or support is existing. And I read it through carefully and realized that it is really the first paragraph of that strategy is really quite forthcoming in these areas. They already there stated that we should work innovatively with new actors on the ground and trying to see and adapt to the new environment and circumstances that we see around us. The third instrument I would mention here is, and that's why this report, and I'm sure EBA also was very knew this very well, is just about to be formulated. And that is the strategy itself on how to work with civil society. We will certainly use the recommendations from the report, and we will also use all the good points that have been made here today when we will work this through. I think there is no doubt that we see a new development of the civil society. On one way, you can say it's same, same, but different. Sweden has a long and solid tradition working with the opposition groups in Africa, in Latin America. The goal and the reason for this support is not so different. But I agree that it's a shift in how the civil society form themselves and the methods they use, and that we need to be able to adapt on that. I think that is a very good point in the report. I also agree that it is of great concern that the room of maneuver for the civil society all over the world is shrinking. It's specific places that we have heard about here, and I think the government see that very clearly, and that we see it as a specific challenge in how we should be able to continue a strong support. I think I stop that. I don't talk too long. I can come back with a few other things I want to say as well. I just wanted to mention, you know, our formal bureaucratic instruments that we have, we're very aware of that we should use these instruments in a very conscious way to meet with these new challenges. However, I want to leave the word to Sira, perhaps, because even if it's important and a big challenge and responsibility for the government to formulate this, to do it is even more difficult. So I think CETA has an even larger challenge than the government in this.
I will certainly give the floor to Karin Feldman from CETA, but just, I will come back to also the foreign minister to discuss this link between foreign policy and aid.
Absolutely, I know that.
In terms of
Lena's
that.
Lena's point is very crucial here.
How would you, CETA, do you think CETA has a good way or capability of adapting to the changing environment that Richard presents in his report?
Well, first of all, thank you so much for an interesting report and also for thought-provoking comments. We do already have, as an overall objective for our civil society support, to strengthen a pluralistic civil society that contributes to democracy, among other things. Now, of course, that variety of actors, or that pluralism, is more of a challenge to us now, with a number of new informal movements and social movements that we are not so familiar with. So indeed, we have a new civic activism to include into that variety of civil society actors. And that is, of course, more than, on our side, a need to conduct analysis, be at the ground and see who's actually there in this variety of actors that are good for democracy or also bad for democracy. So we are beefing up already our analytical capacity, I would say, at the headquarters. We have a new human rights and democracy network encompassing the entire authority and the embassies. But we also work, of course, with other stakeholders to conduct these analyses. We engage with civil society organizations out there, like the International Civil Society Center, they work, for instance, with this rethinking civil society's role in development. We also work in multi-stakeholder groups like the Community of Democracies, Working Group on Protecting and Enabling Civil Society, or the multi-stakeholder task team, where we also have a number of not-so-traditional partners to us. We have the like-minded donors, but we also have Kenya, which is, well, now rather known for shrinking civic space. We have South Africa. We have Bangladesh as quite a long-term member, contributing to this analysis, but also working to reach out to new actors, and the second recommendation in your report, to find ways of stopping the trend of shrinking space. So yes, we reach out ourselves, but then, of course, we are very dependent on our intermediary CSOs to do that. Because for us, it is difficult to be on the ground and to have the people to do the analysis themselves all the time. Moreover, supporting these new actors demand usually that we work through somebody, because it is difficult for us to do it ourselves. And I would say that there, we encourage our intermediaries to reach out to these new actors, but we don't necessarily provide them the tools to do so. So we have the problem in that, first of all, it's really labor-intensive to reach some of these new actors. And like Richard said, some of them are also have quite negative opinions about donor-supported CSOs. So you have to be there and build those bridges. That takes people. You also have to have people there who are able to work with these actors that might not necessarily know how to work in programs and report on results the way that we do. Mm. So it's labor-intensive, and then it's risky. Because indeed, if you want to work with, let's say, an informal grouping within civil society, it's quite probable that that informal grouping does not have the financial systems for management of CEDA funds that we require, which means that it is indeed, at the end of the day, the intermediary taking that risk. So if money is not accounted for, it will be the intermediary, be that a Swedish organization, a Zambian organization, or an international organization, or sometimes also fund managers that are private companies, the UN. At the end of the day, it is the intermediary that has to pay back funds to us. So I would say we are aware of the need to reach out to new actors, but we are not yet there with the tools to do so. Mm. We are looking into ways of sharing financial risk, but we have not really come to the conclusion of how that will work. Mm. We are a bit more flexible, I would say, when it comes to sharing risk for results. Because there, indeed, we encourage risk-taking. We are aware that if you enter into a cooperation with a new actor that you have not been able to work with before, then you might not, at the end of the day, be able to present all the 10 expected results. Mm. It could be that, indeed, the results are somewhat different when they come back. But again, the financial risk, so far, we are not able to share it.
Richard, could you just remember that and see, do you know other donors who have found ways of sharing that financial risk or solution of how to be able to create flexibility in terms of finding ways to go around? Because it's a serious issue that I know many civil society organizations are struggling with, sort of, and it's a very important in terms of if you want to reach those new actors. And are there lessons learned in this case in particular?
I think there are lessons learned. Personally, I don't know of any one organization that has found the magic solution. And in a way, the report takes the easy way out of presenting different options. And I do realize for me, it's just what comes out of the debate. Do you go in a more political direction or a less political direction? And there are arguments on both sides. I think one point I make in the report is there needs to be a much more systematic assessment of the do-no-harm principle than has been present until now, because I think it is clear that the kinds of projects that might have been beneficial 10 years ago today could have very negative risks for civil society organizations. It does put them at danger, as Rachel was saying. And in a way, we need to get ahead of the policy curve, in a way. And try to influence the civil society environment before we get to a stage where there are organisations that are really at risk. Mm. Perhaps the one interesting example I know of is the European Endowment. I know Sweden and together with Poland were the countries most instrumental in setting that up. I think that has done some good work. It's at the margins, limited amounts of money. It's not really the big long-term capacity building that I agree with Robert is still needed, and the report isn't meant to suggest that's not needed. But I mean, this is a small-scale initiative that is designed to say, yes, a lot of the really important activism is the long-term capacity building undertaken by the traditional civil society sector. But there is something else happening, and we do need to react to it somehow. Mm-hmm. And we do need to take risks. We do need to take risks, but have an assessment of what those risks are.
We will get back to that. I just also want to, of course, to give the floor to Elisabeth Pedersen, at the head of international programs at Forum Sweden. How do you recognize the findings that Richard presented in his report and the recommendations that he put forward to donors?
Yes, first of all, thank you for receiving me, and I'm very pleased with this report. I think it's very relevant and very important, and even timing is good. And I think it's the most positive thing about this. It does give us the opportunity to discuss these issues, because I think there haven't been much discussion around exactly what we are discussing this morning. And for Forum Syd, we do agree with the kind of conclusion that there are a trend of new social movements coming up, emerging. We see that ourselves. We've seen it for some years now. And you can even say that they are significantly different in the way of organizing and expressing their opinions, doing advocacy in a different way. Of course, using a new technology, but not only that, I would say that the new generation of young people from these countries are quite innovative. And for us, this is something that is part of our daily life, supporting civil society. We do have quite different kinds and types of civil society organizations within our portfolio. They are both professional, traditional, most donor-driven NGOs, and you do have these more new movements being youth organizations, women unions, quite a bit of variety here. But for us, it does raise some questions that are quite obvious here, but perhaps the answers are not. And this is what we are struggling with today. Because how do you, or how should you, go into partnership between a very formal organization, as a Swedish traditional NGO, and then this more informal kind of movement, very loosely organized? That is one question that I think we need to discuss further to get some kind of answers and some kind of solutions. What are we doing when we can see a big added value of actually relating ourselves in a partnership with an organization, movement, who are not that democratic internally, who do not have these structures in place, who cannot be assessed in the way that we usually assess our partners? Here I'm talking about the assembly, all the formalities that we need mostly to have in place to grant. That's another issue that I think is important to discuss. And the third one is that, and this is perhaps the most important point, and a little bit related to what Robert was talking about in civil rights defenders, that how can we, still having our bureaucratic requirement and demands, how can we avoid to transfer these new organizations into traditional donor-driven NGOs? How can we avoid them becoming that? Because that was not why we engaged with them in the first place. It was quite for different reasons. So that is a balance that we have to discuss, and I think that's, for Forum Süd, one of the most important things that we need to find some kind of answers to, because we do have partner portfolios which are very different and very diverse. Now, I agree with, I think it was Robert again, sorry, that perhaps it's not civil society that we are rethinking, it's more our support to civil society that we need to rethink. What kind of support should we facilitate? Should we rethink our design? And here, of course, we do have a clash between our formalities, our bureaucratic rules and requirements that we need to have, because we have a donor, CEDA, for instance, requiring for us that you need to have all this in place before you can go into local partnership with these organizations and grant them, be it through sub-granting, capacity building, other kinds of support. So I see a dilemma here that we need to find a way out of. How can we, on the one hand, continue supporting these very important and relevant movements, and then on the other hand, not transforming them into small bureaucratic entities, which we do not want, and on the same hand, respond to our donor with our risk analysis and all our formal systems in place. Mm.
Thank you. Before, yes, I will give you the floor. I'll just say that after Cecilia has responded, I will also open up for questions from the audience. Could you respond to that, whatever you had responded, but also the question that I had before of linking, that was one of the recommendations also from Richard, of linking foreign policy and support through aid in a way of counter limited space for civil society.
I will certainly do that as well, but I would like to first take the opportunity to say something about the risk. Mm. I hesitate a little bit to call it financial risk. We're not a business enterprise, and we don't do financial investments in developing countries. I see your point, but I think we should at least call it a political risk, more than a financial risk. And the political risk is, of course, the legitimacy for development cooperation as a whole. The present government is, as former governments for decades now, clear on that we need very, very good rules to make sure that development cooperation is used efficiently and effectively. So I think there is no doubt about that. We need to be able to show to taxpayers in Sweden and the broad base of support for development cooperation among people. We have to be able to prove that this is used in a good way. So then we come into the dilemma, because this is, I mean, development cooperation is a risky business. If it wasn't risky, we shouldn't do it. But this is extra risky. And we're talking now about the front, the edge of taking risks. And I think the government recognized that there is great concern among many of both CEDA and also all those the broad part of civil society in Sweden that should be the implementing agency for this difficult development cooperation. That the result-based orientation of structures are cumbersome and counterproductive in many ways. And the government has taken note of that and would like to sort of try to ameliorate the present system to be a little bit more quality-oriented than only quantity-oriented. So that will be that in itself will broaden a little bit on how we can formulate the risk-taking and make sure that the structures and systems for result-based orientation is not a restriction for being able to do what we want to do, so that we restrict ourselves to do what we only can do according to the Excel sheets, if I put it bluntly. Mm. So there is also an interest in trying to work on that together with CEDA on how to make that better. But that will probably not be enough even to meet with some of the concerns that I've heard here. So I was thinking about that CEDA might be thinking about something innovative to discuss with the government, of a little window of innovation funding pocket or something, where we can take a larger risk, perhaps. I mean, as long as you tell what we're doing, it's easier to make failures. So it might be that we should rethink a little bit of having a little pocket, perhaps, for risk innovation or something like that. It's just an idea that I have now, so I have no support.
I can see suddenly everyone sort of starting jumping on that. But
Should I take the other political discussion?
Please do.
Yeah,
and then I'll let Karin come back in as well.
I think that most of you that are following the government's work know that we're taking a big step now to work on policy coherence for development cooperation. The what we call in Sweden the PGU, Policy for Global Utveckling Agenda. And there is an enormous support from the Prime Minister and the Finance Minister, which is almost most important, to work on this. So that is on the broad agenda within the government, but that will also reflect very closely how we will work in the Ministry for Foreign Affairs, already working very, very much more closely linked between development cooperation and the political foreign policy part. So I think on that part you are opening doors. Mm-hmm. That is what we really would like to do. And next step would be also to try to make a little bit more of creativity in this sense within the EU and within the UN as well.
Okay, Karin, you had a direct response to the issue of flexibility, I think. So before I let you.
Thank you. Maybe I was being a bit too self-critical. We do indeed have a number of innovative ways of supporting civil society and sharing risks. We have, for example, the government's special initiative on democracy and freedom of expression that turned into a long-term strategy where, indeed, we are encouraged to take risks and support new actors, and where, like I said, we are primarily have a high risk appetite when it comes to the risk for results. But again, it is an issue very much that at the end of the day, if money is not accounted for, that it will be the loss of the intermediary. So that is very much a hard nut to crack. But so indeed, a lot is happening also within like the more mainstream strategies, like the CSO strategy, where we work with Swedish civil society organizations. So we are looking into ways of being more flexible when it comes to CSOs trying to reach out to the new actors. When you talk about risk, I was also keen on commenting on the political risk that we have here, included in our efforts to reach out to a variety of actors, some of them maybe not so obviously good for democracy, some of them not being the liberal civil society organizations that are our usual partners, at least looking at the evaluation that we made of CEDA CSO support in 2013, the ones that work very much as advocacy organizations and checks on government power, but rather the other ones, the bridge builders, those that are closely related sometimes to the government, or those that might be opposing and not really advocating for democracy but for something else. If we are to reach out to those, what political risks do we take being associated with some of these new actors? We need an analysis about that. Mm. And then we're talking about the civil society actors going into working to reverse the trend of shrinking space for civil society. Like I mentioned, we work in a multi-stakeholder team with CSO Partnership for Development Effectiveness, which is actually the global alliance of civil society actors representing more than 23,000 CSOs and civil society groupings, also some of these informal actors, working specifically to promote a CSO-enabling environment. They do that with us and a number of like-minded countries, like the Netherlands, Canada, US, and, again, Kenya and Bangladesh and South Africa. What does it mean to work in this kind of multi-stakeholder setting and to support this great variety of CSO mm-hmm. actors for the good name of Sweden? Can we, should we work closely with USAID, for example, to combat the trend of shrinking space? Or will we then be associated with the freedom agenda and participate in the kind of West against the rest support for certain democracy actors and targeting specific governments? We have to be aware of all these risks. And that means, again, that we have to conduct quite an analysis of the various roles that these new CSO actors have, or civil society actors, I should say, but also what it means to liaise with other governments, to reach those and to combat shrinking mm-hmm. space. So we are navigating into a fairly politically risky mm-hmm. environment as well.
Richard, I'd like you to comment on that in particular as well, but after. Of course, I've not promised the audience to come in for a couple of times. So we do have two microphones, I think, that will soon be working. But meanwhile, could you just raise your hand and, of course, and please state your name and affiliation or organization. I think here, Pat, in the middle.
Thank you. My name is Per Nordlund, and I'm CEDA's lead policy specialist on democracy and human rights. So I first of all, would like to congratulate Richard on a very good report and a very interesting presentation. It's a strong voice, and it's an important voice in our continued dialogue forward. I've also been part of the reference group together with a few other people in the room, and I think we really enjoyed the discussion with you continuously throughout this. It's been hugely... And I think the discussion here has been really good, but it also reflects that Sweden and CEDA are quite far along the when it comes to the recommendations that you are highlighting. So I'm not going to go into that debate. I'd just like to highlight a couple of other issues that have not been discussed so much, but that do come out in the report. The mirror of this discussion on civil society is, of course, the way that the state is engaging and functioning on this. And I think in over the last 10 years in CEDA, we had a significant shift in our support in favor of civil society and away from engaging constructively with state actors and state institutions. And that has created a situation where we now have an alternative to how a democratic development state should be organized. There are alternatives out there being pushed by Russia and by China and by others. And I think that has been one of the problems in the broader enabling environment. And that also reminds us that we need to engage with the new actors that are engaging with civil society, but also engaging with the state actors in these countries. The Indias and the South Africas and the Koreas and the Indonesias of the world. I think that's a very important point. But there are two structural developments that will change the landscape to some extent. One is that the bulk of the labor force in the world will be in sub-Saharan Africa over the next 30 years. And that goes along with a strong urbanization process. So we will have a young... labor force in sub-Saharan Africa. That means that the structural movements that you say are sort of the rise of structural foundations for this age of protest, the trade unions, for example, in Africa, will become increasingly important in our work around civil society and democratization. And that doesn't come out as much in the report. There's another tendency that you also mentioned in the report that has to do with a move towards more local politics. We have a strong decentralization process in many of our cooperation countries. Not always in terms of devolution of political authority at the local level, but to some extent. So there is a window of opportunity also there at the local level to work with, and we haven't really talked so much about that. But those are two structural processes that will affect the way we work with civil society, I think, in the future. Thank you.
Do we have any other questions? And thank you. Yes, here on the side. Oh, the other side, sorry.
My name is Karin Norberg. I would like to pick up on where Per ended about various freedoms which we are defending as the Swedish government, but which we now see threatened, and which will definitely mean that the space for civil society in the future seems to be threatened, not only in countries, authoritarian countries, but also in other countries, democratic or semi-democratic. Just to give one example, it was stated in one of the international newspapers the other day that China is willing to give Greece to buy the port of Piraeus. There was one condition linked to this offer to buy the port, that freedom of association for trade unions would be abolished. Now, this is a tremendous threat which we see in the European Union. And in view of that, I think it's very important for the Swedish government not only to work internationally to bring up these issues, but it's also important for a development cooperation agency like SIDA to become much more flexible and risk, not avert risk, but to take risk. I think that is precisely what is needed right now. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. I've got two, and because of time, I'll ask you to be very short and concise.
Hello, my name is Martin Engeby. I'm the Secretary General of the Swedish International Liberal Center. I have a question for Richard, and maybe other of you want to comment on it. How did you choose the labels Republican and Liberal to describe different kinds of civil society? Because it's not immediately intuitive to me. Is it a reference to American politics, etc.? And what I would see is missing from there, whereas Liberal, to me, would emphasize freedom of association. You have freedom, use it. Republicans more like the traditional role of the church, but there is also a social democratic or socialist notion of civil society where the movements should actually be in the ruling party. So if you could elaborate a little on these labels, and I'm not sure that they're going to be useful for the continued debate, but maybe I'm wrong. Thank you.
Thanks. Helena, right in front of you, if you could just pass it on, please.
Yes, my name is Helena Bjurman. I work for International Idea. I'll be very brief. One question to the panel, whoever would like to answer. If you have experiences with providing support for civil society's very strategic communication to counter the massive amounts of professional PR-supported campaigns by authoritarian governments, it's like the fight over the narrative and the agenda, like what's on the agenda, how it is portrayed? Because my sense is that there's very, very little such support. There is no PR advisors without borders. There should be, because it's needed. And then I have a second question to whoever feels like answering. When it comes to supporting without political or with a limited political and financial risk, if there are experiences to share when it comes to, say, incubating a more junior partner or twinning support or in-kind support or merely some type of accompaniment support where you could support some an emerging movement without necessarily giving them the money that would require them to turn into that horrific bureaucracy, which is not really the goal. And a final just call for, I really think there's a need for innovative ways of results reporting. It doesn't make sense that sort of the video killed the whatever, well, Robert's version of the democracy killed the activist. We have to start at home and practice what we preach. Thank you.
Was that a question to the whole panel or to Richard?
It was more a call that please, change is needed.
Okay. I will give all of you a very short time to respond to particularly perhaps the question was raised to you on are they thinking of countering what Helena just said, the big funds that could go from government for PR and in terms of countering that through organization. I think that was the question that perhaps I think you could all elaborate a little bit on. Okay, is there ways of for Forum Sud, for example, to counter when a government has a lot of resources and PR to express what they're saying, and in terms of how can civil society do good communication, basically, to counter that? Is that what are you were aiming at? but quick response from you regarding that, and then I'll give the floor to Richard also to respond to several questions. But
yes, Forum Süd, as we are supporting, for instance, civil societies in many different forms in Belarus, which is a good example, I think, where you have a whole machinery of government money to actually direct the agenda in which way they want. Mm. What we are doing as Forum Süd, we are partnering with these different kind of organizations who are working not openly. They are having their base outside the country, are working inside in a very, very subtle way, not directly having their name in the media, but doing a lot of different kind of campaigns. And exactly, we are facing the same kind of risks, as has been mentioned before, demanding a lot of receipts. Mm-hmm. Traveling with the receipts in Belarus is highly, highly risky. But we have to have these receipts, exactly as you were mentioning, Robert.
Mm. Okay.
So I think it's worth to have that past discussion in a different place. But yes, we are trying to counteract. It's not easy. I would say it's very difficult, also because you cannot be visible. You cannot stand up against such a government, and perhaps you should not do it. So we're trying to operate in many different ways, with many different issues, which are not obviously political on a more like a party agenda or opposition agenda, but more like working with environment as a more peaceful kind of thematic issue, but still very political underground, I would say.
Karin, quickly, is this part of your thinking of civil society having that role as well and funding for that?
Yeah, well, I think our support to civil society organizations in some of these countries where indeed the government have a lot of PR people rather going against civil society and naming and blaming civil society activists is the financial support that we provide to these CSO actors. They use, of course, because most of it is core support or program support in the way that they want. And nowadays, that is very much also having public campaigns to counter that government PR campaign, so to say. So yes, indeed, there is a kind of PR war ongoing in some of these countries with, indeed, Swedish funds going to the CSO partners, just like you mentioned from Forum Süd. So that is happening, indeed. I just wanted to talk quickly about the support to civil society actors that we do not want to make into the traditional civil society organizations with the systems to manage Swedish funds. We do have that kind of support primarily by creating forums and meeting spots with the CSO partners that we already have, like the networks, like the CSO Partnership for Development Effectiveness, where indeed local activism is the basis for the work of these global networks. They are I would say, active at global, regional, national, and even local level. Mm-hmm. And there they do relate and support, partly also with money, some of these informal actors that have no interest in becoming this, let's say, traditional civil society organizations. So there are ways of reaching out to them, but that is primarily through the intermediary organizations and with small money, but more than anything else, forums and meeting spots and bridge building efforts.
Thank you. Thanks to all of you. I'm sorry we are running out of time, but and I would really like to give the last word to Richard here to comment on some of the questions raised. It was the question of why the notion of liberal versus Republican isn't that way too American for this context. The issue of flexibility has come up a lot during the discussion, and it would be interesting for you to comment that as well, listening to the Swedish context here. Results reporting and the demand for results reporting, and does that go along? And in that, I would also like to come back to questions that's been raised on, is there really, because the long-term relationship has also been raised quite a lot here of being important for Sweden, and is that even possible with this new social movements that you describe, or even desirable? I'm putting a whole list for you now, sorry. But then also, I was wondering, Rachel mentioned in her comments the role of INGOs. Is that, how do they fit into the context that you describe? And you have about 2 minutes to answer that.
Right, so being very brief and very selective, thank you for all the comments. On Sweden, as the foreigner, without kind of flattering Swedish egos, I have to say...
Oh, please do.
I think the point made in the report that in a lot of these issues, it is true that Sweden is probably out ahead of other donors on the innovation, on the risk-taking, on the merging of foreign and development policy thinking, on the onus given to new movements, new types of actors. In a way, that's why the report is being done and presented in Sweden and not in other countries. But in many other European donors, at least, things are moving in the opposite direction. Donors are giving less money for civil society. They are becoming more risk averse. They're becoming more cautious. And so I would argue one thing Sweden can and really should be doing is trying to lead on this agenda at the European agenda, because until we get other European donors with big amounts of money moving in the same direction, the effect of anything Sweden does is going to be less. So that's my kind of outsider's view on Sweden. If there's one message I would like my report to deliver, really, it's the need for balance. It's the need for balance. Some people say that these new mass movements provide the secret for the future of democracies, health around the world. Other people say they're completely disastrous, that they're too individualistic, that they circumvent in a negative way all the channels of representative democracy. My report really is kind of a middle ground, saying that there is positive potential there, but don't get carried away with it. Don't break up all your long-term development relationships. Part of the equation still is the traditional civil society organizations. Many people today write reports saying that model of the traditional civil society organization, the NGO, is finished. We should forget about it. I'm not saying that. I think but there does need to be a proper balance between the positive and the negative aspects of these new movements, between the new activism and the old activism. And I think the secret is to link it all together. And that really was my point in using the liberal and Republican terms. These are not my terms. These come from many centuries of debate in political science about the relationship between the state and civil society. They're not actually American terms. They're more kind of French, from de Tocqueville and but you may be right. They may be misleading, because people may read into them other interpretations. What I basically mean is one function is the watchdog scrutiny kind of function. The other function is the capacity or partnering function, helping states deliver better capacities to work better. And I think effective, good quality democracy requires both those functions to be fulfilled. That may seem obvious to CEDA, to Sweden here, but you go and talk to people in the recipient countries, and the very common view is still that donors confuse or conflate civil society with the opposition. Yeah? Or they're doing the opposite, and they're thinking civil society is only about service delivery, helping build hospitals and roads. And I think we must be able to fashion a kind of more sophisticated merging of those liberal and Republican concepts. But I take the point that maybe the terms are not the best in a European context. How to partner with the movements? How to partner with the movements? I don't think it's about offering huge amounts of financial resources expressly to favour or to promote the new mass movements. I think, I forget who it was who made the point, maybe Rachel, I think that kind of model is less pertinent today than it was 10 years ago. So I take the point, it's not about Sweden going out on a limb to be favouring with big amounts of financial resources some actors whose democratic credentials might then... I mean, it's not a question of CEDA favouring the Salafists across the Middle East or these kind of things. But I think it's more a question of making sure that all these different actors join together and don't undercut each other. I think it was Lina who mentioned the example of Egypt. For me, Egypt is one of the best examples of how things went wrong, because we had an uprising of a mass movement, very pro-democratic, successful. It emerged, it got a democratic breakthrough, it got rid of the authoritarian regime. Then it fractured, it fragmented, it became very hostile to the NGOs, the human rights community, the political parties, the Muslim Brotherhood, the Salafists, and everything kind of fragmented and fractured. That these new actors basically disappeared from the scene, and then when they came back on the scene 2 years later, it was to protest in the streets for the return of the military regime, for the return of the military regime. After Egypt had gone through the difficult part of actually having a pro-democracy revolution and getting rid of the authoritarian regime. That, for me, Egypt shows more clearly than anywhere else, there must have been a better way. There must have been a better way to make sure the new movements were talking to the NGOs, were talking to the parties, that there was some kind of assessment there of the risks to transition, how transition could have been made much more sustainable. And there I think the international community is not going to be the direct force orchestrating a better transition, but something more could have been done. And then final point on coordination with new actors, non-Western democracies, INGOs. I think basically just to echo Karin's point, that anything that can be done to get over this impression that supporting civil society is a Western agenda, it's about supporting a Western concept of civil society, anything that can be done to that end is vital and will become increasingly important. And the thing that I think counts in our favour there, or the favour of organisations like CEDA, is that increasingly you've got NGOs from other countries, Turkish NGOs, Indonesian, Indian, South African, Brazilian NGOs, increasingly suffering the same kind of problems that Swedish, German or Dutch NGOs are suffering. And so I think there is the basis there for much more of a global partnership. So I forget who said it, civil society within Europe itself is changing. So then, again, there are surely foundations there for a partnership between new actors within the West and beyond the West, and for us to base a kind of global conversation on those on that basis.
Well, thank you so much. I've failed in terms of keeping time. We are 10 past. My God, sorry. So with that, I will just all thank you to the panel, to Rachel for coming, to Richard in particular, of course. Thank you, Emma. At the EBA Secretariat for her support or help during this process. Thanks for the reference group also as well as part of that. So with that, I hope this discussion and the report, which you all should read, hope that will contribute also to the coming discussion on the new civil society strategy. Thank you very much.